Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on this Wednesday morning, March the 11th, 2026, 15 minutes past the hour. Glad to have you with us along for the ride this morning. And as many of you know, coming up on Cinco de Mayo, May the 5th, there will be a primary here in the state of Ohio. And one of the races that will be primary that day is the Ohio Secretary of State race on the Democratic side. One of the contestants' candidates in that race is currently serving as a member of the Ohio House of Representatives. She formerly served as Ohio House Minority Leader from January 2022 to June 2025. What a pleasure it is to welcome to our microphones this morning for the first hour of the program, Representative Allison Russo. Representative Russo, how are you?
Good morning, Scott. I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well. Good to speak with you. For people who don't know, why have you decided to run for Secretary of State?
Yeah, well, very simply for me, this is about voting and voting access and making sure that every single Ohioan has access to fair, free, and secure elections. And the Secretary of State is the state's chief elections officer, and I think that it is just a critically important role, especially now, you know, as we move forward and want to have a responsive government.
You know, a lot of things going on in regard to what you just said. One of those things that has been in the news as of late, Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose has turned over the voter registration data of nearly 8 million Ohioans to the U.S. Department of Justice. What do you make of this?
Yeah, well, it's very disappointing news to learn that our current Secretary of State has handed over Ohioans' private information, so social security numbers, last four digits, driver's license number, or state ID number. You know, the Department of Justice has asked many states across the country to hand this over, and we've seen secretaries of state, both Republican and Democratic secretaries of state, say no to that request because the President of the United States nor the Department of Justice have any authority to have that data and information. And in fact, the states that have not turned those data over, when the Department of Justice has sued those states, so far three federal judges, some Trump appointees, have sided with the states because election administration is a state process as guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution. And the federal government has no authority from Congress or through a court order to have access to those data. So really disappointing that our Secretary of State caved and just handed it over. And, you know, the question now is what exactly was sent over and how those data will be used by the Department of Justice, because that is very unclear at the moment.
Well, and I think that's the big question for a lot of people. What could possibly happen here? Why is this a bad thing is what people are asking themselves.
Yeah, well, first of all, let me just say that Ohioans do have access to a lot of voter file information about individuals. The problem comes when you connect that with very personal information, like the last four of your social security number and your driver's license ID. Having your voter information connected to those personal identifiers is where the real problems come in. Because, you know, what we know is certainly under this administration, individuals' private information has been shared outside of agencies. And so the question is, who is gaining access to that? How is it being used? And I think most Ohioans can agree they want as much of their data kept private as possible. And so, you know, that is the big question right now is how will this be used? I mean, we suspect that what the administration and Department of Justice are trying to do is to build a massive federal voter registration list, and they determine, you know, who gets purged off, you know, for a variety of reasons that may or may not be what the American people want or what states have decided. And so that's the big question, and we don't know, which is hugely problematic, which is why, you know, at the very least, there should be some sort of court authority or congressional authority to have these data and to use them, and they simply do not have it.
A lot of people have suggested that the outcome of elections could be changed now that the federal government has access to these records. Is that a possibility or a probability?
Well, I mean, let me be very clear, Scott, because I think, you know, a dangerous place that we are heading towards is questioning election results and questioning our election integrity. And I want to be very clear that there is no evidence of massive voter fraud or changing of election results. And our elections are very secure. In fact, the current Secretary of State now in the state of Ohio brags about us being the golden standard for election security. And I don't disagree with that. Election fraud is exceedingly rare. And when I say exceedingly rare, I'm talking about millions of votes cast, and you may have one or two cases that appear over a number of years. And so, you know, the question now is, can election results be changed at the federal level? I think that it is unlikely that they can be changed at the federal level. But again, you know, we are in new territory where we have a president of the United States who every day is sending very clear signals that he wants to interfere with the election process, that he will not accept election results unless he wins or his side wins. And that's just not simply, that's not who we are as Americans. That's not who we are as a democracy. So that is a very dangerous place, I think, for us to be, no matter who is in charge. We want to have trust in our election process and in election integrity.
Well, and I think coupling with this, President Trump this week was touting the Save America Act, which I think requires people to have voter ID and does require a passport, which a lot of Americans do not have. And President Trump said this week that this is America's number one priority and the thing that people ask him most about. Those statements and your understanding of what this Save America Act is, what's your take on this? What's your read on this?
Well, I think, first of all, if you ask most Ohioans what their number one priority is, it's being able to afford rent, it's being able to afford groceries, rising gas prices, child care. There are a number of things that I think Ohioans would argue are most important to them. Also, I want to be clear that in the state of Ohio, we do require voter ID, and we have for a very long time to vote. Of course, the forms of ID that can be used to vote have been very restricted in that it's a very limited type of ID that you can use to vote in most recent years. I also want to be clear that the Save America Act, it is federal legislation, so it's pending in Congress. Right now, it seems to be stalled in the U.S. Senate. But it's not simply a voter ID bill, because most states do require voter ID. It fundamentally changes how we do voter registration in this country. And so what it requires now are specific types of paperwork, like a valid passport, like a birth certificate that has someone's birth and maiden name, which of course becomes very problematic for many women. And it also requires that you do your voter registration in person. And so it creates all of these new paperwork hurdles as well as logistical hurdles for people simply to register to vote. And remember, in Ohio, you cannot vote at the polls legally unless you have been registered to vote at least 30 days before an election. And so there are real questions about how this even gets implemented, especially in an election year. But then when you think about, you know, all of those wonderful programs that we do in our high schools, in college campuses, at assisted living facilities, at our churches, to get people registered to vote so that everyone can have a voice in our election process. This bill would make those things illegal because you'd have to go into a government office to actually register to vote, to present your paperwork. And so it is a massive change in how we do voter registration. It is not simply about voter ID.
And that's very interesting because the president said he wants this done before the midterms. And to paraphrase him, I don't have the exact quote, but essentially he said if this was not done before the midterms, that it was going to cost his party quite a bit. So when it comes to voter registration or even how this would work or why this would cost his party heavily, I'm not even sure at this point as we're almost to the primary this year.
Yeah, well, and this is what our elections officials across the country, you know, the concerns that they have raised is that implementing this massive change in how we do voter registration, which could cause people, again, to have, to, even if you're registered, you've been voting for years, you're registered, have to re-present yourself with this paperwork to register to vote. And by the way, this is not something that simply targets one party or another, voters in one party or another. This is something that will have an effect on every single voter in every single community. If you think about many people who live in our rural communities having to drive to a county board of election to, again, represent their paperwork. You know, we've got a lot of older citizens here in Ohio having to find a current copy of your birth certificate, which is incredibly difficult over a certain age. If you don't have a more recent copy, these things cost money. If you are a woman, you then would have to present additional paperwork because our birth certificate names often do not match our current names if we are married and we've taken our spouse's name. So again, when you start to think about the logistics, the cost, the hurdles that this presents for all voters, you know, I think it's damaging across the board. It's not simply targeted at one party or another. And what the president is really saying is, I'm concerned that I am going to lose in the midterms. And all evidence seems to be pointing that, you know, the American attitude and perspective on his policies has shifted away from him. And that should be a concern that he has. But that is the American decision, and that's up to the voters. It is not up to rigging the rules and changing the process so that you can win. That's not democracy.
Well, and a lot of people have said that places that President Trump won, very rural areas, this would hurt more than more affluent areas. So a lot of people are confused on how this would even help him in the long run.
Well, that's right, and I think it's why we see Republicans right now in the U.S. Senate who are very hesitant to change the filibuster rules in order to get this across the finish line for the president. Also, I think many Republicans rightfully recognize, again, that our U.S. Constitution is very clear that election administration is a state process and a state right. And so, you know, Republicans have been opposed for a very long time in federal interference in elections. And so I think you've got a number of things right now, even within the president's own party, working against him. But at the end of the day, my primary concern is I want to make sure that every eligible voter, every eligible voice has a seat at the table. Their voice is heard. They've got convenient access to the ballot. And they are the final arbiters and make the final decisions about who represents them, whether it be in Washington, in Columbus, on the school board. It should be the decision of the people, not politicians in charge who want to rig the rules to get the election outcome that they want.
What's your feeling? Do you think the Save America Act will be passed before the midterm elections?
I think it seems very unlikely that it will pass through the Senate, and I think that becomes more unlikely every day that passes. However, what I am concerned about is rhetoric from the president, and he said this in the State of the Union, that he wants to issue an executive order to implement some components of the Save America Act. And again, I want to go back to The President of the United States has no authority granted to him through the U.S. Constitution or through Congress to interfere with our election process. And so I suspect if he goes down that route, much of this will be fought in the courts, and ultimately, you know, it will come down to court decisions intervening here.
A lot of people have said, I'm sure that you've heard this, that if things don't seem to be going President Trump's way by the time the midterms happen, that we will not have elections, that martial law will be called, something will be done. This election would not happen. Now, that would be very unprecedented in recent times. Do you think there's a real possibility of that happening if the president feels that he cannot win in the midterms?
Well, my hope is that every elected person, Republican and Democrat, would push back strongly on the idea that we would cancel elections and not allow the American people to have their voices heard through the ballot box and the power of their votes. You know, I won't rule it out as a possibility simply because, you know, we've seen many unprecedented things from this president. And if we've learned nothing else, you know, when he says he's going to do something, unfortunately, he does often carry out some of those things. However, I think in this case, you would see massive pushback from across the political spectrum to this interference and overreach by a president of the United States. You know, there's something I have learned in my time in service, and certainly over the last few years, and we saw with that August special election where the Republicans in the State House had to try to do a power grab to take away one person, one vote, and that is that people do not want their power taken away, and especially their power to have a say in what their government looks like. And, you know, I often say government only works when it has accountability and transparency. And the best path to accountability and transparency is through the power of your vote in our election process.
We talked earlier in the interview about current Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose turning over the voter registration data for nearly 8 million Ohioans to the U.S. Department of Justice. He will be the Secretary of State when the midterm elections happen. Do you have confidence that he can carry out these elections in a fair and proper manner?
Well, my hope is that he will. You know, certainly we have seen him put his thumb on the scale to influence outcomes. You know, the most egregious example was in November of 2024 with the anti-gerrymandering amendment that the people brought forward, and he used his position on the ballot board to manipulate that ballot language so that it was confusing and people didn't know when they walked into the ballot box, am I voting for gerrymandering or against it? You know, but my hope is that he will commit to being and continuing to be a fair arbiter of our election process during the elections. What I get really concerned with both him and, you know, this majority in the legislature is manipulating the rules of our elections to make it more difficult for people to both conveniently access the ballot but also to have their vote counted. You know, we had a change recently in state election law that is going to increase the number of provisional ballots that are cast in this primary election as well as in the general election. And if people don't correct these errors that could be the result of just bureaucratic databases, they may have their voter registration canceled. And that means that they cannot participate in the election process if they don't get that fixed in time. And so it's things like that, those more nefarious under the radar things that make me concerned about the ability of people to actually be able to have their voice heard on election day.
You, as we said in the beginning, you are involved in a primary. Brian Hambly is the other Democratic candidate running. Do you feel you can pull this off in May? And why are you the better candidate?
Yeah, well, I feel good going into the May primary and feel confident that I will make it past this primary election, but I don't take anything for granted. You know, I'm going all across the state. We will have hit all 88 counties by the primary date, spending a lot of time on the road talking to voters and talking to people about, you know, who I am and why I'm running for this office and why I'm best qualified. I mean, the answer to why I'm best qualified in this primary especially is experience. I don't think that the Secretary of State's role is something for a first-time candidate who's never had to maneuver in this legislature, maneuver around state government. This is not a job for a first-time candidate or a first-time office holder. And so I bring that experience to the table. I'm proud of that experience. And especially in this moment in time where we are seeing threats to voting rights and voting access from both the state legislature as well as the president himself, it is so important that any Secretary of State can hit the ground running on day one and be a guardrail to this interference that we are seeing.
Why do you think we've seen the uptick in a lot of candidates who don't have any political experience?
Yeah, well, I think some of this comes from, I think, frustration with, you know, elected representatives and government that honestly has not worked very well for a lot of people. I mean, listen, I ran as a first-time candidate in 2018, and for the legislature, I did win that race. And, you know, we have seen a number of people stepping up to run for the first time, and I think first-time candidates are wonderful. I've recruited them. I've supported them. But I think in some of our offices, especially these state executive offices that have so much responsibility, knowing how to maneuver around state government and having some experience and the relationships to actually be effective is incredibly important.
What do you make of the fact, and a lot of people have brought this up, that the top office here in Ohio, the office of governor, both candidates have never been elected to any office in their career, Ramaswamy or Acton. What do you make of that? I don't know that that's ever happened in the history of Ohio.
Yeah, again, I think that it's reflective of the time. You know, we're seeing these non-traditional candidates step forward. You know, I will point out in the case of Amy Acton, while she wasn't elected, she has served within state government and at least can find her way around our state government and understands, for example, the state budget process, which is critically important, and how many of our departments run. So she certainly has that to her advantage. Over Ramaswamy, who, you know, again, comes to this proclaiming that because he has been a quote-unquote successful business person, he can successfully run government. I don't think that that is necessarily the case. When you are in business and being successful, you're doing it to make profit. When you're in government, you are doing it to serve people, and that is a very different objective. And so I don't think that those skills are always translatable. And listen, the last time he had his hands in government and federal government was with DOGE, and we see the tremendous amount of damage and, frankly, the failure that DOGE was.
What do you make of Dr. Acton's popularity around the state and breaking records when it comes to fundraising?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, Dr. Acton came to the public eye during a period where there was a lot of uncertainty, and she brought certainty and information when people were desperate to have that during the pandemic. And so I think, you know, that is the connection that a lot of people have with her, and she is building on that. And, you know, I get to see her quite a bit on the campaign trail. And I will tell you, you know, that connection and authenticity that she has with the public is very real. And that is something very special, I think, when you are running for office and especially running statewide. And, you know, you can't, no consultants can build that or train you to do that. That's something that you have, I think, naturally, and she brings that in spades.
When we come back to the Secretary of State race here, current State Treasurer Robert Sprague is running in the Republican primary. A lot of people feel he's the odds-on favorite to win that. What do you make of Robert Sprague and a lot of Republican office holders seemingly just shifting positions statewide as we head into this election?
Well, I mean, listen, I think Mr. Sprague is indicative of what many people are frustrated with at the moment, and that is this musical chairs, especially in these statewide executive offices where you've got, you know, people shifting around. And by the way, he also wanted to run for governor first, then he wanted to be lieutenant governor. Secretary of State seems like the third choice for him because nothing else was working out. And I think people are really frustrated with that attitude for these elected offices. You know, I think it's great to come with experience, but you should have a passion for the office that you're running for, and you want to do it because you believe in, especially as the Secretary of State, you believe in voting and democracy and giving people a voice. And so, you know, I think that that is the problem right now. And also, listen, we're seeing this musical chairs amongst the Republicans after essentially three decades of, you know, full control of state government here in Ohio. And so, you know, I ask people, do you feel like that's done you any good, especially in the last decade? Do you feel like you're better off in the last decade than you were before? Because certainly when we look at the outcomes here in Ohio, our health outcomes, our educational outcomes, even many of our economic outcomes, you know, people are hurting. We are not doing well. We are in the bottom half in the United States where before Ohio used to be a leader. So it's not working, and we need something different.
Currently, all office holders in the state of Ohio are Republican statewide. Why do you think it came to that, and what is different this year? Why will this year be different for the Democratic Party?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, without a doubt, the Republican Party in particular has been able to build a very strong infrastructure, and that happens when you have power. That's part of having power is you get the resources to build that infrastructure to run stronger campaigns. You've got more money, et cetera. So I think it's part of that. A lot of it has also, I think, been some of the national politics that we've had and the shift there. But I think, you know, right now, given what we are seeing from this administration, we certainly are seeing Trump lose popularity nationally as well as here in the state of Ohio. You know, we've got these foreign wars, whether it be Venezuela, Iran, now this week apparently Cuba. As well, you know, we've got people who are really struggling to afford the basic necessities to keep a roof over their head, to buy groceries, to put gas in their car, to pay for childcare so that they can go to work. And I think, you know, we are seeing nationally a shift away from Republicans and Republican policies. And this is an opportunity for Democrats. But it's not enough for us to talk about what's going wrong. We have to talk about what is it that we bring to the table. And so for me, as Secretary of State, what I bring to the table is, number one, someone who is going to be an advocate for voters first and foremost, and number two, wants to return power back to the people of Ohio, because people do deserve better. They do deserve a voice in what their government looks like. And that comes through the power of voting in our elections.
We've got about 15 minutes left this morning with Representative Allison Russo, who is currently a candidate in the Democratic primary for Secretary of State coming up on May the 5th. Yesterday, our governor, Mike DeWine, gave his final State of the State after 8 years of being governor here in the state of Ohio. And this is what he said. He emphasized the importance of longer recess periods and limited screen time for children in his last State of the State speech. DeWine endorses a bill requiring an hour of recess each day for students in kindergarten through eighth grade and praises Ohio's ban on cell phones in schools. The governor expressed concerns over the negative impact of excessive social media use and screen time on children's mental health and calls for legislation to address issues related to child pornography created by AI. What do you make of Governor DeWine coming to the end of his term and his last State of the State address?
Yeah, well, I was at the State of the State yesterday. Listen, I appreciate and have always appreciated the governor's focus on children. This is where I think he and I have found a lot of alignment over the years during my time, certainly as the minority leader and as the legislator. But also, let me just say, I think that it is great that the governor talked about all of those things. But, you know, when we're talking about the basics of recess, making sure that our children are protected from AI, that feels like a very low bar. That is the bare minimum of, I think, what we should be doing to protect children in this state and to invest in children's education. And I think what I was struck by most during the State of the State was this disconnect of the reality of policy choices that have been made by this legislature and budgeting choices that have been made by this legislature that make it incredibly difficult for our schools, for children to get the resources and support that they need, and for our communities to be strong for our children and have those resources available. And it simply does not reflect what the realities have been for many Ohioans that are struggling and our schools that are struggling. I mean, I was reading just last night and this morning the number of school districts across our state that are cutting millions of dollars from their budgets, cutting staff and supportive staff, these paraprofessionals that do things like reading intervention and speech and language intervention, or cutting teachers from our public schools because they don't have the resources, because this legislature has consistently underfunded our school districts and reduced the state share that is coming to help pay for education in the state. And so I think it's great that the governor, you know, put emphasis on literacy, for example, and children, but frankly, he needs to have a conversation with his own party and the legislature and the majority in the legislature, because the priorities in terms of what we're actually spending our state dollars on do not match that intent, and the outcomes show it. And so that was my, and has been my great frustration.
When you look back at the 8 years of Governor DeWine, how do you grade that 8 years? How do you look back on his term?
I mean, listen, I think he has, in my perspective, not been an incredibly strong governor. I think he has let the more extreme elements of his party dictate policy that has been made, budget decisions that have been made. I mean, there have been many times where the governor has introduced his version of a state budget, and the budget basically directs resources to, you know, many of these programs, to our schools, for example, to many of these support programs. And, you know, I have supported what the governor has wanted to do and where his priorities are, especially as it relates to children and families. But his own party will then shift the priority away from our families and our communities and towards giving more tax cuts to the wealthiest 1% of Ohioans, you know, sending money out the door to fund more private school vouchers to the tune of $1 billion per year now, sending money out to billionaires to build their stadium projects in Cleveland, for example. And so, again, you know, that has been incredibly frustrating to me, that he has not been able to rein his own party in to actually carry out what I think he has the good intent to carry out, but has let the more extreme elements of this party take control. And we've seen that become more and more extreme during my 8 years in the state house.
You know, Representative Russo, it's very interesting. We've talked with Mary Ellen Withrow a lot on this station about being a woman running for office being in politics. And she always says it's much more difficult for a woman. And even in 2026 here, we've never had a female governor elected in Ohio yet. We've never had a female president. And in the current city we live in, we've never had a female mayor. Why is that? And do you think it's harder for women?
Well, yes. Yes, it is. I don't know. I ask myself this question a lot. You know, why in Ohio in particular, we have struggled to get more women into executive positions. I mean, even in the state house, we are still at about 35% of representation in the state legislature, even though, by the way, women represent 51% of this state. And, I think some of it is there is still misogyny that exists and bias. I think this exists in both parties. Women are expected to come to the table with far more qualifications to be deemed ready to run for an office or capable of running for an office. It is harder for us to fundraise. I mean, I've recruited a lot of candidates and supported a lot of candidates during my time as the House Minority Leader. And generally, women have to work much harder to raise the same amount of money. And you can see, where donors will give less to a woman than they will to a man. I think, there are many women who have, I think, very valid concerns about stepping up to run because of, many of the attacks that we face online and in the public, and so there are safety concerns as well. So we still have a lot of work to do, and listen, I've faced this myself, even in this primary election, and it's been a real eye-opener, even for me, someone who comes to the table with a tremendous amount of experience and knowledge in this space. You know, the number of people who have questioned, well, why would I dare run against a man who was in this race first? To which I've responded, well, do we give the job to the first person who applies or to the most qualified person? And so we clearly still have a lot of work to do. Mm.
Why did you decide to get into this race after Mr. Hambly had announced?
Well, because I feel so strongly that this office in particular is very important to our democracy and to the election process. And I also know and understand the full scope of the work of the Secretary of State and the importance of having good experience in doing this work and having the relationships to be able to be effective, especially as a Democrat. I felt very strongly that my experience is necessary to do this job and to be effective in this job, because at the end of the day, again, this is about how do we ensure that the voters of Ohio have their voices heard.
Is this more of an issue than it was, let's say, 10 years ago?
Meaning, what is...
Having voices heard out of the Secretary of State's office.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I would say over the last 10 years, especially here in Ohio, we have seen constant chipping away at the ability of voters to conveniently access the ballot, to have their voter registration not be canceled, to be able to show up at a polling location and trust that they won't have to vote provisionally. We've seen just incredible changes to voting rights and voting laws that, to me, have not been good changes that have made it more difficult for people to participate in this election process. And, we've also, I hear from elections officials all across the state because our elections only run because of the work of our boards of elections and our poll workers and our elections officials in our 88 counties. And they are very frustrated because these election laws have changed. They're often left to try to implement these with little guidance and resources to be able to do it. And all of that has an effect on how people can access their vote and have their voice heard. And I think we've seen, you know, more people, especially in certain communities, become frustrated with the process and feel like their vote doesn't matter. And why should I bother to even show up because my vote is not going to be respected? And so I think all of these things are critical problems that have to be addressed by the Secretary of State. And, you know, I'm committed to doing that.
There aren't a whole lot of Democratic primaries coming up statewide on May the 5th. Do you think there will be a good turnout among Democrats on primary day?
Well, listen, I am experienced enough to know that a Secretary of State primary is not going to drive massive turnout to a primary election. However, we do have pockets across the state where we see some local elections, whether that be state legislative races, county races, some issues in certain communities that I think will drive out turnout in certain pockets. But I suspect overall, for both Democrats and Republicans, you know, it will be a fairly sleepy primary because the top of the ticket, which is the gubernatorial race for 2026, does not have a primary in either the Democratic or Republican sides.
Yep. At this particular point, and of course everybody wants to be positive, if for some reason you do not win this primary, would you support Mr. Hambly and his run for Secretary of State?
Oh, of course. Of course. Listen, I am a big believer in, supporting our ticket. While I've never lost a primary before, it certainly would be a first occurrence for me. I certainly would support whoever comes out of our primaries.
With less than 2 months to go until the primary, how confident are you that you will pull this off?
Well, I feel very confident. I mean, that said, you know, you either run unopposed or you run scared. That is my philosophy. So I take nothing for granted, which is why I'm on the road at least 6 of the 7 days of the week. Certainly my family can attest that I am spending very little time right now at home, but they understand that this is really important and that what's at stake with voting rights and our democracy is worth it. So to me, this is a labor of love, and I look forward to Election Day on May 5th. Early voting, by the way, starts on April 7th. So if you are unsure what you're going to do on May 5th, then make sure you have a voting plan because you can early vote starting on April 7th. The last day to register to vote is Monday, April 6th. So please check your voter registration. Make sure that you don't need to update your voter registration or there aren't issues with your voter registration by April 6th. You can go to voteohio.gov, put in your first and last name and your county to look up your voter registration information, find your polling locations, et cetera. So have your voice heard in this primary.
With 2 minutes left to go, why is Alison Russo the best candidate for Secretary of State?
Well, I am the best candidate for Secretary of State, whether it's the primary election or the general election, is because I believe that you deserve the full power of your vote and that you deserve an advocate as Secretary of State for your voting rights. And I also believe that you deserve the experience to be able to come into this office and to do the work that needs to be done to ensure that every single Ohioan has access to fair, free, and secure elections. So I am honored to be running. I would be honored to be the Secretary of State. And by the way, Secretary of State shouldn't even be a partisan office. It should not matter who you vote for, what issue you support. You should trust that the Secretary of State is going to be your advocate, respect your voice, ensure that the information you see at the ballot box is fair and unbiased and that you can conveniently access your right to vote.
Well, with a minute left to go, do you feel currently this is a partisan position for Frank LaRose?
I believe that our current Secretary of State, Frank LaRose, has absolutely brought partisan politics into this office, and that has been probably the most disappointing thing about his tenure. And I want to change that because You know, again, it really should not be a partisan office. You should trust that whoever is the chief elections officer is going to respect your vote, advocate for you, no matter, again, what your partisan affiliation is or who you're voting for, what issue you support. And so I am committed to doing that.
Representative Allison Russo has been the guest this morning. She is currently a candidate for the Democratic primary in the Secretary of State race coming up on May the 5th, Cinco de Mayo. Representative Russo, always a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Scott. I appreciate it.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and come back right after this.
You deal with that.
Well, in the first place, you look at it and you see whether it's valid or not. And then you consider this.